He knelt by it, and a sound like a squeak escaped his throat. Suddenly, the air in the hall seemed too hot and close. It seemed to be strangling him. He turned away from Gary, one hand cupped over his mouth. Someone had murdered Gary. Someone had... He forced himself to look back. Gary lay in a pool of his own blood. His eyes glared sightlessly up at the hallway ceiling. His throat had been opened, not just opened. Dear God, it looked as if it had been chewed open. This time there was no struggle with his gorge. This time he simply let everything come up in a series of hopeless choking sounds. Crazily, the back of his mind had turned to Charity with childish resentment. Charity had gotten her trip, but he wasn't going to get his. He wasn't going to get his because some crazy bastard had done a Jack the Ripper act on poor old Gary Pervier, and he had to call the police. Never mind all the rest of it. Never mind the way the old pervert's eyes were glaring up at the ceiling in the shadows, the way the sheared copper smell of his blood mingled with the thickish sweet aroma of the honeysuckle. He got to his feet and staggered down toward the kitchen. He was moaning deep in his throat, but was hardly aware of it. The phone was on the wall in the kitchen. He had to call the state police, Sheriff Bannerman, someone. He stopped in the doorway. His eyes widened until they actually seemed to be bulging from his head. There was a pile of dog droppings in the doorway to the kitchen, and he knew from the size of the pile whose dog had been here. Cujo, he whispered. Oh, my God, Cujo's gone rabid. He thought he heard a sound behind him, and he whirled around, hair freezing up from the back of his neck. The hallway was empty except for Gary. Gary, who had said the other night that Joe couldn't sick Cujo on a yelling nigger. Gary, with his throat laid open all the way to the knob of his backbone. There was no sense taking chances. He bolted back down the hallway, skidding momentarily in Gary's blood, leaving an elongated footmark behind him. He moaned again, but when he had shut the heavy inner door, he felt a little better. He went back to the kitchen, shying his way around Gary's body, and looked in, ready to pull the kitchen hallway door shut quickly if Cujo was in there. Again he wished distractedly for the comforting weight of his shotgun over his arm. The kitchen was empty. Nothing moved except the curtains, stirring in a sluggish breeze which whispered through the open windows. There was a smell of dead vodka bottles. It was sour, but better than that other smell. Sunlight lay on the faded, hilly linoleum in orderly patterns. The phone, its once white plastic case, now dulled with the grease of many bachelor meals and cracked in some long-ago drunken stumble, hung on the wall as always. Joe went in and closed the door firmly behind him. He crossed to the two open windows and saw nothing in the tangle of the backyard except the resting corpses of the two cars that had predated Gary's Chrysler. He closed the windows anyway. He went to the telephone, pouring sweat in the explosively hot kitchen. The book was hanging beside the phone on a hank of hay rope. Gary had made the hole through the book where the hay rope was threaded with Joe's drill punch about a year ago, drunk as a lord and proclaiming that he didn't give a shit. Joe picked the book up and then dropped it. The book thudded against the wall. His hands felt too heavy. His mouth was slimy with the taste of vomit. He got hold of the book again and opened it with a jerk that nearly tore off the cover. He could have dialed zero, or 555-1212, but in his shock, he never thought of it. The sound of his rapid, shallow breathing, his racing heart, and the riffle of the thin phone book pages masked a faint noise from behind him, the low creak of the cellar door as Cujo nosed it open. He had gone down cellar after killing Gary Pervier. The light in the kitchen had been too bright, too dazzling. It sent white-hot shards of agony into his decomposing brain. The cellar door had been ajar, and he had padded jerkily down the stairs into the blessedly cool dark. He had fallen asleep next to Gary's old army footlocker, and the breeze from the open windows had swung the cellar door most of the way closed. The breeze had not been quite strong enough to latch the door. The moans, the sound of Joe retching, the thumpings and slammings as Joe ran down the hall to close the front door, these things had awakened him to his pain again, his pain and his dull, ceaseless fury. Now he stood behind Joe in the dark doorway. His head was lowered. His eyes were nearly scarlet. His thick, tawny fur was matted with gore and drying mud. foam drizzled from his mouth in a lather, and his teeth showed constantly because his tongue was beginning to swell. Joe had found the Castle Rock section of the book. He got the C's and ran a shaking finger down to Castle Rock Municipal Services in a boxed-off section halfway down one column. There was the number for the sheriff's office. He reached up a finger to begin dialing, and that was when Cujo began to growl deep in his chest. All the nerves seemed to run out of Joe Camber's body. The telephone book slithered from his fingers and thudded against the wall again. He turned slowly toward that growling sound. He saw Cujo standing in the cellar doorway. "Nice doggy," he whispered huskily, and spit ran down his chin. He made helpless water in his pants, and the sharp ammoniac reek of it struck Cujo's nose like a keen slap. He sprang. Joe lurched to one side on legs that felt like stilts, and the dog struck the wall hard enough to punch through the wallpaper and knock out plaster dust in a white, gritty puff. Now the dog wasn't growling. A series of heavy grinding sounds escaped him, sounds more savage than any barks. Joe backed toward the rear door. His feet tangled in one of the kitchen chairs. He pinwheeled his arms madly for balance and might have gotten it back, but before that could happen, Cujo bore down on him, a blood-streaked killing machine, with strings of foam flying backward from his jaws. There was a green, swampy stench about him. "Oh, my God, lay off'n me!" Joe Camber shrieked. He remembered Gary. He covered his throat with one hand and tried to grapple with Cujo with the other. Cujo backed off momentarily, snapping, his muzzle wrinkled back in a great humorless grin that showed teeth like a row of slightly yellowed fence spikes. Then he came again, and this time he came for Joe Camber's balls. "Hey, kiddo, you want to come grocery shopping with me and have lunch at Mario's?" Tad got up. "Yeah, good. Come on, then." She had her bag over her shoulder, and she was wearing jeans and a faded blue shirt. Tad thought she was looking very pretty. He was relieved to see there was no sign of her tears, because when she cried, he cried. He knew it was a baby thing to do, but he couldn't help it. He was halfway to the car, and she was slipping behind the wheel when he remembered that her Pinto was all screwed up. "Mommy?" "What? Get in." But he hung back a little, afraid. "What if the car goes kerflooey?" She was looking at him, puzzled, and then he saw by her exasperated expression that she had forgotten all about the car being screwed up. He had reminded her, and now she was unhappy again. Was it the Pinto's fault, or was it his? He didn't know, but the guilty feeling inside said it was his. Then her face smoothed out, and she gave him a crooked little smile that he knew well enough to feel it was his special smile, the one she saved just for him. He felt better. "We're just going into town, Tatter. If Mom's old blue Pinto packs it in, we'll just have to blow $2 on Castle Rock's one and only taxi getting back home, right?" "Oh, okay." He got in and managed to pull the door shut. She watched him closely, ready to move at an instant, and Tad supposed she was thinking about last Christmas, when he had shut the door on his foot and had to wear an ace bandage for about a month. But he had been just a baby then, and now he was 4 years old. Now he was a big boy. He knew that was true because his dad had told him. He smiled at his mother to show her the door had been no problem, and she smiled back. "Did it latch tight?" "Tight," Tad agreed. So she opened it and slammed it again, because moms didn't believe you unless you told them something bad, like you spilled the bag of sugar reaching for the peanut butter, or broke a window while trying to throw a rock all the way over the garage roof. "Hook your belt," she said, getting in herself again. "When that needle valve or whatever it is messes up, the car jerks a lot." A little apprehensively, Tad buckled his seatbelt and harness. He sure hoped they weren't going to have an accident like in 10-truck wipeout. Even more than that, he hoped Mom wouldn't cry. "Flaps down?" she asked, adjusting invisible goggles. "Flaps down," he agreed, grinning. It was just a game they played. "Runway clear?" "Clear." "Then here we go." She keyed the ignition and backed down the driveway. A moment later, they were headed for town. After about a mile, they both relaxed. Up to that point, Donna had been sitting bolt upright behind the wheel, and Tad had been doing the same in the passenger bucket. But the Pinto ran so smoothly that it might have popped off the assembly line only yesterday. They went to the Agway Market, and Donna bought $40 worth of groceries, enough to keep them the 10 days that Vic would be gone. Tad insisted on a fresh box of Twinkles, and would have added cocoa bears if Donna had let him. They got shipments of the sharp cereals regularly, but they were currently out. It was a busy trip, but she still had time for bitter reflection as she waited in the checkout lane. Tad sat in the cart's child seat, swinging his legs nonchalantly. On how much 3 lousy bags of groceries went for these days. It wasn't just depressing, it was scary. That thought led her to the frightening probability, her mind whispered, that Vic and Roger might actually lose the Sharp account, and as a result of that, the agency itself. What price groceries then? She watched a fat woman with a lumpy behind packed into avocado-colored slacks pull a food stamp booklet out of her purse, saw the checkout girl roll her eyes at the girl running the next register, and felt sharp rat teeth of panic gnawing at her belly. It couldn't come to that, could it? Could it? No, of course not. Of course not. They would go back to New York first. She didn't like the way her thoughts were speeding up, and she pushed the whole